There was never stability, ever.
As far as the personnel?
No. Yeah, I mean, everybody's neck was on the line, but many fell, and nobody took it for granted that they weren't going to be next. So I think until probably the late 1990s, did I actually feel like I had any security at all.
Really?
Yeah.
Yourself?
Yes. Yeah. But, you know, I mean, I'm never one to have been overconfident and sort of full of myself and think, this is my gig, you know, come on, nobody can do this, I'm amazing. But, yeah, it was vulnerable and things went wrong, but some people went because they needed to, other people went and they shouldn't have done. It's I can't really go into details.
But you witnessed all this, so that's increased stress, really, isn't it?
It was horrible, really horrible. Because they're very much friends as well as musicians. But yeah, anyway, whatever.
Yeah. On a scale,
it's part of Jethro Tull.
And
sadly, that dilution of what essentially Jethro Tull was just got weaker and weaker. So if you take a Jethro Tull band and say that's a definitive lineup, where when I think of Jethro Tull I see those guys, I don't know what lineup that is. It's probably different for everybody, but I mean, I would say other than Glenn Cornick, Clive Bunker, me and Ian, and maybe John Evans, that was a pretty important lineup. I would say it would be bursting out, you know, where you've got Jeffrey Hammond, John Evans, David Palmer, Barry Barlow. That is so many different lineups, but that's in my mind, looking back, that's the lineup that should be here today. Bands don't get rid of a big personality just because their playing's gone downhill a bit. You know, that they get over it, they get round it. So in my mind it was a mistake.
Yes.
A big mistake. Mm. Mm. But I didn't have a voice to say, no, actually so should be in the band. You know, he's earned his place, and we have to sort of help him get over it, you know, having a bad patch musically or personality wise. I mean, a couple of people quit on their own decision, but mostly not.
It must be strange, because I suppose now you must be in receipt of an outpouring of affection for you, really, that perhaps you didn't think was there 20 years ago. I don't know, because as you say, you were very much part of the band. You didn't, I know you gave interviews and stuff, but Ian Anderson was the one who was always giving the interviews, really. Is that partly true, do you think, that you are witnessing, certainly with this current tour and the previous tours, you know, that my God, people really like me?
Well, I was aware that you know, within the Jethro Tull family of fans, I knew I had a place there. So, whatever, you know, I'm not going to say, everybody adores me, everybody hates me, nobody cares, it, but whatever, I can't control that. But they're great fans. The people that come and see me play are just amazing. You know, I sign autographs, I meet them. But the bad thing in a band is that when you've got a figurehead that really lives off interviews and talking, and I mean, self-promotion is a harsh word to use, but I think Ian just sort of loved that side of it. You know, he loved to talk about many, many subjects. He's a very intelligent person, and that part of his job became more important, I think, than other things, which I won't talk about. But there's that. I think it sort of morphed into a situation where Ian wanted to do all the interviews, and you know, he'd do a radio show. Some things upset me. I could do a radio too. You know, maybe this is in the 90s, talking about the history of the band. I just thought, well, if Sting did it, he'd have Dominic.
Mm.
He'd be there, because Sting acknowledges Dominic has given him a lot. You know, he's my friend. He's part of the music. Here he is, and he wants to say something. I was really upset about that. Really upset. But that was the way things were going, and that became normalised. But the other side of it is, you know, you've got a bunch of musicians that nobody hears. And they don't have a microphone to talk through, and people just think, you know, they lose interest. They become depersonalised because they don't have a voice. It's a really bad mistake.
I think it would hurt anyone. Actually. I think
I mean, some, you know, the band aren't here, but you know, I'm not keeping them away. And at the end of the, you know, if I do a radio, I at least ask Dan, because Dan is part of what I do. And if it was practical, I'd have two or three of them. We'd go in the studio and play a song, have them all, and I'd want them to talk. I say, I think it's a band.
Mm.
That's the difference. It's a band.
You put yourself perhaps in a more healthy position now, haven't you, really? In many ways, really, you know, from a personal point of view.
Yeah, it's a happy band.
Yeah.
Not saying that anybody else's band isn't happy. I mean, I think if they come into a situation which is black and white, which certainly has happened in other bands, then there's no argument. You know, I just do my job, I get to the gig, I play the music, I try and play it really well, and then I go home, I get paid for it. You know, I'm not being paid to talk about my childhood, my politics, or who I like, which are my favourite musicians. It's black and white. But when you start together, it's different. And I feel that, you know, there's a growing stage with my band where we're all sort of working hard to make it work better and better, so that they need a piece of the action. They deserve it.